legal tests, vaccinations, withdrawal of blood for diagnostic purposes, the trial of vaccines prepared according to well-established scientific purposes are permitted, but the animals have to be killed immediately and painlessly after such an experiment. They loved animals. You can love animals, you can love trees, and you can hate people. That's what it teaches us. Culture, morality, no, nothing to do with, you know, fake furs. What does it teach us? How are we going to prove that the Holocaust occurred? I'd like you to help me here. What could we do to prove that the Holocaust is an actual historical event? Could somebody here help me out? What can we do? How are we going to prove it? I'm sorry? Build a museum, and what will be in the museum?
Artifacts of...
Like what? Give me an example. What will be in the museum?
The clothing that the...
Clothing? Clothing? The Jews went and sewed up clothing. They rolled it in the dirt for a while. They said this was in the Holocaust.
It's just
photographs? Films? You mean photographs of what happened? Photographs? You never saw Jurassic Park? You never saw dinosaurs zetzing flying across the screen? I would submit to you, when it comes to photographs and films, I would submit this to you, that the vast majority of films that you have seen in your lives are things that have never happened. Most films are things of fiction. Most of the films you've seen are not films of things that have occurred, but things that have never occurred. You know what they can do in Hollywood today with films? You know what they can do with photographs today? Help me out. Yes, sir. Testimony of people. You have testimony, but these people, what happens when the people are not alive any longer? Videotaped. That they would write down the testimony of people. Write down testimony of people, I think, is very valuable. Where they write down that, but how do you know it's true? How do you know someone didn't just... Let's say you then have, in 100 years from now, you have this scroll. Also, you have a lot of people in that, but how do you know the whole thing, 50,000 things, were not forged by one person could write 50,000... but it's valuable. Thank you. What you're saying is valuable here. Yes? Tell it over, transmit it. But how do you know it wasn't a big lie that you're transmitting? Maybe we're just perpetrating a lie that happened. Yes. By what you're saying is valuable. Again, I just want to hear what you're saying. I just want to...
Newsreels that they had from those...
You're talking films. There's a young man over here that talked about films. Right? Lupe just mentioned films over there. Well, as I said, again, think about the dinosaurs. Think about all the films you've seen. They could reproduce anything. White and cold, make it in black and white. Yes. So the Nazis own documents. Again, how do you know the Jews didn't forge those documents? It wasn't written by Nazis, it was written by Jews. That's what Arthur Butz claims in his book. Yes? But again, they're not going to be alive at that time. The witnesses, it's true. Having witnesses stand on the witness on the stand testifying is certainly very important. That's primary evidence. Right? And that's true. But what do we do again in 50 or 75 years from now? Yes. And I'm playing again. What you're saying is very valuable here. Again, I'm just sort of, you know, playing...
Okay.
Yeah.
In the Torah codes, it does mention, I think, the Holocaust.
Torah codes. Well, you see what an effect Torah codes have. We'll work on Shabbos and there... Yes.
I don't think you really can prove it.
Oh, here's a pessimist. Can't be done.
I don't prove it. All these revisionists when you see our things. No one can prove it.
Okay. All right. Anyone else? Anyone else? All right.
How about the Gentiles who witnessed?
Okay. Well, they're going to be dead also in 75 years from now. Right. Many Nazis have testified to what happened. They said the Nuremberg trials, certainly. But again, they're going to be dead. But that's very valuable. Let me make a suggestion, and I think the suggestion I'm going to make is in some ways a composite of some of the things you've said here. But maybe we can take us on a different course here. I would suggest this. To preserve the memory of the Holocaust, to preserve the teachings and ethics of what the Holocaust teaches us, I think that a Holocaust club needs to be formed. A Holocaust society needs to be formed. We need to gather together all the survivors in one place. That's what we need to do. And we have to give their testimony. They have to describe what it was like living in Poland when the Nazis came into town. What it was like in France. What it was like in Berlin and Munich when they would gather together and they had to be at a certain place at a certain time. They had to describe what it was like getting on the trains and saying goodbye to their families. What it was like on that slow trip in those cattle cars for days and days as the train was pulling a load that it was not designed for and that only can travel 30 or 40 miles an hour. And the starvation and death that took place in those cars. They had to describe the thirst and the hunger, the humiliation of having to relieve themselves in a way and no food and have to drink from water that would fall from icicles, that would fall from the windows, from the little cracks in the corners. That they should describe after 5 or 6 days of living in a cattle car with corpses and finally the doors being opened and Jews come get out and being whipped into lines. And smelling an acrid fume and seeing smoke billow out of a chimney and being told to get into a line. And as they stood in line, how there was a man at the front of the line who would tell them if they went to the right or if they went to the left. They should describe what it was like for when they were taken and they were tattooed and how their hands swelled for days on end because of that tattooing, the blue numbers on their arms. That should describe the countless corpses they had to drag. How they had to live off the dead. When someone died, they had to take their bread. If you didn't live off the dead, you too would join them. How you had to take their clothing and put it on your clothing so that you can survive just another day. They should describe the events of what it was like living at the edge, watching the people they loved perish. What it was like living in Auschwitz when you knew that it was in the middle of Sukkot for the rest of the world in America. What it was like when you heard the Allied bombings coming close, but they never bombed the tracts. And you thought, surely tomorrow they will. What it was like when you suddenly realized, and the rumors were going throughout the camps, that soon they were going to be liberated, and the Nazis came and said, we're going on a march. What that death march was really like. And they should describe what it was like to finally meet the Soviets, the Allies, the Americans, and to be freed. What it was like to watch many of their friends die because they ate food that the soldiers innocently gave them, like chocolates, and their stomachs could not handle it after being starved for so many years. They'll describe this all in their testimony, what it was like getting on a ship, going to a DP camp, and then getting on a ship to the land of Israel. They should bear testimony, and this testimony should be put in a scroll. And there should be a rule in this Holocaust club that you cannot change the scroll. The scroll is going to record the testimony of all these thousands of people, and no one can change one word. Because they're going to take the scroll, and once it's finished, once it's completed, you can't answer the scroll and you can't take away, and anyone who does it is liable for the death penalty. And this scroll has to be stored in a special place where no one else can touch it. And if you're going to make other scrolls, every family has to have their own copy of the scroll. You must, if you're going to be a member of the Holocaust Club, you must each have your own scroll. But the one scroll that's there, where the gathering takes place, that scroll, no one, it has to always be measured against that scroll. And only authorized scribes can write such a scroll. And every member of the Holocaust Club has to wear a yellow badge. A yellow Jewish star has to be on their clothing. If you're to be a member of the Holocaust Club. And when you speak about the Holocaust, you don't speak about it in English or French, only in the language of the Holocaust, only in the language of Eastern Europe, only in Yiddish. And in the Holocaust Club, we're going to teach our children about ethics and morality. We're going to teach people about culture, about education, the kindness to animals, that politically correct ideals. These things have nothing to do with morality. They're completely disconnected. There's no relationship between them. And not only that, every member of the Holocaust Club every morning has to put a little yellow box, and in it an excerpt, a very important excerpt from the scroll has to be placed in this box. One box goes on your head and one box goes on your arm. Every member of the Holocaust Club has to be tattooed with the number of that family. Every member of the Holocaust Club, as a baby, as soon as the baby is born, a little tattoo is put on the arm with the number of that family. A segment of the Holocaust scroll has to be read every evening before every member of the Holocaust Club goes to sleep and before they wake up in the morning. And it goes like this. Hear, O members of the Holocaust Club, remember and never forget the Holocaust happened to us. And you shall remember the Holocaust with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. and the rules of this scroll that you shall be kept committed to practice every day shall be on your mind and your heart. I did not include this in the handout. And you shall talk about these rules with your children when you sit in your house before you retire at night, when you wake in the morning, and when you travel outside your home. And you shall write these words on strips of parchment to be worn on your head and arms every morning in little yellow boxes before starting your day. You shall write them upon the doorposts of your homes and gates so that you remember the rules of this document all the days of your life. Every member of the Holocaust, thousands and thousands and thousands of people remember the Holocaust. Every member of the Holocaust Club once a week goes on strike. They don't work. Instead, they come to special Holocaust Club gathering halls where they discuss the scroll. They take the entire Holocaust scroll. It's huge. It's enormous testimony. And they divide it up into 52 sections. And every once a week, they read a portion from that Holocaust scroll. There's no intermarriage permitted amongst the Holocaust Club. You cannot marry someone who is outside of the club. You cannot allow someone who is not part of the club to marry someone who is a member of the club. It will lessen the message. It'll water it down. It will dilute it. We will permit new members to join the club, but we're going to make it tough. We don't want them to just join in on some whim, or some fancy moment of a high that they want to transmit. They have to be sure that they're going to commit their life to transmitting the message of the Holocaust Club. We do not allow just people to pop up and jump. I want to be in. We're going to sprinkle them with water. No. They have to be people who will take a vow, and when they become members of the club, they too must get the tattoo on their arm. There'll be holidays. There'll be three special holidays throughout the year. The first holiday, it'll be a holiday where they'll think about what the survivors had to do and endure. You'll have to eat on this holiday potato peels, and you're going to dip it in puddle water. And you'll eat it with stale bread. No fresh bread could be eaten during this holiday. You cannot wear regular clothing on that holiday. You have to wear special clothing, the concentration camp clothing, with gray and white stripes going down. You have to pass it down to your children. You have to do these things so your children will ask, why are you doing it? And you'll tell them, because you are a member of the Holocaust Club. Never forget it. We're living the Holocaust. There'll be a second holiday. Second holiday where everyone's a good one. There's a better one. Everyone gets on ships. We're going to record how the Jewish people, how the Holocaust survivors after the DP camps went to the land of Israel. And they went by ship. So for 7 days, all the members of the Holocaust Club, they don't stay home. They close their houses up and they go on a ship to reenact the going to the land of Israel after the Holocaust. And it'll be a third holiday. And that third holiday will commemorate when the club was formed, when the scrolls were written, the gathering, all the recording of the testimony. That night of the third holiday, we're going to stay up all evening, all night till the morning, and study the scrolls. We're going to teach our children. Do you understand now? Now let me ask you a question. If we have millions of people living the scroll. But you see, a million people living a bizarre life. You say they're crazy people. But you see, they have a scroll that attests to the people. If you only had a scroll, you'd say, some idiot wrote it. It was a forgery. You have millions of people that are living the scroll. The scroll attests to the people, and the people attest the scroll. Yisrael b'yiraisa kudusha b'richu chadhu. I believe that's what it means. Yisrael b'yiraisa, the nation of Israel and the Torah, chadhu, they're one. Each attests to the other. The nation attests to the scroll attests to the people. I want you to know that what I've said to you is not that bizarre. It actually, there was a world gathering of Holocaust survivors in June of 1981. It really began with a very special man who I had the opportunity over the last few days to speak with, to talk to, and moreover to listen to. His name is Ernest Michel. Ernest Michel is a man who's a survivor of Auschwitz, amongst other of these places, and he describes how in 1943 he was in Auschwitz. It was Passover. It was, imagine Passover in Auschwitz. They had no matzah in Auschwitz. They had no wine in Auschwitz, but they had a dream. They had a dream. They had a dream of freedom. They had a dream of redemption, and a pact, a covenant was made in 1943 in Auschwitz. He describes this in a wonderful book called Promises to Keep. And the dream was that if somehow, some way, they would survive this hell, they would have a world gathering where they would bring survivors together. Ernest Michel's an extraordinary man. I read the book over Sukkot, and it's just, I could not put it down. I read it one entire night. He describes what it was like to bury those who he loved. The survival. They survived off dogs. There were German shepherds there, and they would have a couple of Jews would go out, and they'd see the German shepherd there with the food. So one would distract the dog, hoping not to get killed. The other one would grab the food, and that's how they would. There were other people besides Jews who were in his camps. Not many. About 10% of the camps, 8% of the camps were homosexuals, gypsies, and criminals. Not just criminals that they didn't pay a parking ticket. People who murdered and raped and pillaged. And they were Nazis, would not kill them. They were the ones in charge of giving out the soup, the potato soup. And each Jew, when he was there waiting on lines in the freezing cold, minus 40 degrees, with the bowl that you'd use for everything, for relieving yourself from eating from, and there were going to be thousands and thousands of people there, and there were only about 400 or 500 bowls in Auschwitz. How the person who ladled out the soup controlled your life. Controlled your life. Because if they gave you soup from the top, or they took soup out without stirring it first, so there was no potato in your soup. If they took it from the bottom, so there was a little piece of potato in the soup. If they stirred it first, you might have a little piece of peel, little potato peel in your soup. That would give you energy for another day. In 1981, in Jerusalem, there was the gathering of Holocaust survivors. I'm sure many of you here remember that. It was an extraordinary event. 10,000 survivors came together. Ernest Michel spoke on the first night. He spoke at Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Israel. Take a look at it over here on the page. Same page. Ernest Michel, chairman of the World Gathering. This was his speech. My name is Ernest Michel. Auschwitz number 104995. Like many of you, I had a dream that one day, if we live, we could come and stand together. This is a reunion of a special group of people for which there was no parallel anywhere. We want to stand together once more before time runs out, united in freedom as we were in slavery. We want to see in each of others' eyes and in the eyes of our children the proof of our survival and the joy that comes from being alive and free. But there is more than that. We survivors want to tell those who try to rewrite history and deny that the Holocaust ever happened. Our eyes have seen, our ears have heard, our nostrils were filled with the acrid fumes of the gas chambers drifting over our camp. Day after day, week after week, year after year, these hands, he holds up his hands to the audience, have carried more corpses than I care to remember, so don't tell us it never happened. We were there. This gathering could not have taken place 10 or 20 years ago. It took time for wounds to heal enough for us to meet. This is why this event took place almost 40 years to come into being, and that is why we shall never meet again as one group again. It has become fashionable to invoke the memory of the Holocaust. So much has been written, so much has been dramatized. It is we who have lived it, we who have survived it, we of whom they write, we of whom they speak. So today it is our turn. Today we speak. Despite the memories of the past, we have built new lives. Many of us have second families. So many of the first were exterminated. We have children, grandchildren. We have sanctified the names of those we lost. We have contributed to the Jewish tomorrows. A number of people have asked, why are you doing this? Why do you want to meet? Why recall a past such as you've had? Why not leave it alone? Our response, straight and simple, we survive for a purpose. Already something constructive has emerged from this gathering. Represented here are almost 1,000 members of the second generation. I am pleased to announce that they have formed here in Jerusalem a second generation international network whose major purpose will be to carry on the memory of the Holocaust. Like you, I will never forget this week, the seeking, the finding, then that first look of recognition. Aren't you? Aren't you? Weren't you? Block 14, Commando 35 from the ghetto. The embrace, the touch, God, how I know it felt to see each other, to be together, the tears, the smiles, the memories, the stories, and so on. That is actually a wonderful book. Some of you may want to get it. It's like a coffee table book, and this is it over here. From Holocaust to Redemption. You can see them standing in front of the Western Wall where they're going to take an oath. So that was on the last night. That was on the night of June 18th. I want to... They produce a remembrance document. I want you to take a look at it. Turn the page. This day, the 16th of Sivan, 5741, in this 36th year of our liberation from the hands of the Nazis, we are all standing before the remnant of our sanctuary in Jerusalem to transmit the legacy of this generation to future generations to come. We are members of the generations which lived through the Holocaust. One of a city, two of the families survived. Some are scattered amongst the nations from Holocaust to dispersion. Others came to Zion from Holocaust to redemption. Ours is the generation of our children. They are standing here with us today, children without grandparents. And the generation of our children is also with us. The memory of the 6 million burnt in the fires of the Holocaust is with us here as we transmit our everlasting legacy. Remember and let nothing be forgotten. Remember what evil men did to us. Remember we are a people scattered and dispersed among the nations and all countries. Forget not. Look at the last paragraph. Let every Jew view himself as though he had been scorched in the fires of the Holocaust. For the obligation lies on him to remember and not to forget. To turn memory into action. To restore the life and culture of our people. Turn the page. You see on the top of the page, what occurs there in front of the word, Menachem Begin was there and he spoke that evening. It was a Thursday evening, was the closing ceremony at the wall, 6,000 memorial candles, 1,000 people per candle. 6 million, this was the evening of the future, the transmission of the legacy. In 6 languages, Hebrew, Yiddish, English, French, Ladino, and Russian, a survivor read the legacy, and the son or grandson of the survivor received it. For 45 minutes, 10,000 people sat in perfect silence, and as an Israeli, an Australian, a New Yorker, a Parisian, another Israeli survivor read, in each of the 6 languages, we take this oath. We take it in the shadow of the flames of whose tongues scarred the soul of our people. We vow in the name of dead parents and children. We vow with our sadness hidden, with our faith renewed. We vow we shall never let the sacred memory of our perished 6 million be scorched or erased. We saw them hungry in fear. We saw them rush to battle. We saw them in the loneliness of night, true to their faith. At the threshold of death, we saw them. We received their silence and silence, merged their tears with ours. Deportations, executions, mass graves, death camps, mute prayers, cries of revolt, desperation, torn scrolls, cities and towns, villages and hamlets, the young and the old, the rich and the poor, ghetto fighters and partisans, scholars and messianic dreamers, ravaged faces, fists raised like clouds of fire, all have vanished. We take this oath. Vision becomes a word to be handed down from father to son, from mother to daughter, from generation to generation. Remember what the German killers and their accomplices did to our people. Remember them with rage and with contempt. Remember what an indifferent world did to us and to itself. Remember the victims with pride and with sorrow. Remember also the deeds of the righteous Gentiles. We also remember the miracle of the Jewish rebirth of the land of our ancestors in the independent state of Israel. Here, pioneers and fighters restored to our people the dignity and majesty of nationhood. From the ruin of their lives, orphans and widows built homes and old new fortresses on our redeemed land. To the end of our days, we shall all remember all those who realized and raised their dream, our dream of redemption, to the loftiest heights. We take this oath here in Jerusalem, our eternal spiritual sanctuary, that our legacy endured as a stone of the temple wall. For her prayers and memories burn. They burn and burn and burn and will not be consumed. And finally, we have the acceptance of the second generation. We accept the obligation of this legacy. We are the first generation born after the darkness. Through our parents' memories, words, and sounds, we are linked to that annihilated Jewish existence whose echoes permeate our consciousness. We dedicate this pledge to you, our parents who suffered and survived, to our grandparents who perished in the flames, to our vanished brothers and sisters, more than 1 million Jewish children so brutally murdered. to the all 6 million whose unyielding spiritual and physical resistance, even in the camps and ghettos, exemplify our people's commitment to life, we pledge to remember. We shall teach our children to preserve forever that uprooted Jewish spirit which could not be destroyed. We shall fight anti-Semitism and all forms of racial hatred by our dedication to freedom throughout the world. We affirm our commitment to the State of Israel, to furtherance of Jewish life in our homeland. We pledge ourselves to the oneness of our Jewish people. We are your children. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you've figured it out by now. This was a model. But I want you to know something. There was another gathering that took place 3,300 years ago. And yes, you are the bearers of the torch. There was a gathering of survivors on the 14th year. Look at paragraph number 8 in the 14th year, the first day of the 11th month. Moses spoke to the people of Israel according to all that God, the Lord, had given him in commandment to them. Today you are all standing before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders. The testimony. Take a look at the second paragraph. And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, you have seen all the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt. Look where it's underlined. Verse 4, I have led you for 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out upon you, and your sandals have not worn off your feet. Who is he talking to? Did this happen? Did this occur? I want you to pay very careful attention to section number 10. Look at these two paragraphs, because again, I want you to now think, everything's at stake here. Everything's at stake. Did it happen? This document comes into existence at a certain point. People hear it for the first time. The Torah wants to forewarn any possibility that it was invented earlier or later. The first generation hear this. Now look at this over here. The first generation here, first of all, notice something. Whoever receives is told, did you notice that your forefathers don't have this document, only you do? That I didn't make this document with your fathers, but with you? And then the next paragraph will say, did you notice that this was not made with your children? Look at section 10, the eyewitness accounts. This first text is from Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 1 through 3. And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I speak in your hearing this day, and you shall learn them and be careful to do them. The Lord your God made a covenant with us at Horeb, Horeb is Sinai. Now, tell me what you make of verse 3. Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive this day. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain, out of the midst of the fire. Again, who is hearing this for the first time? When did this come into being? Which generation hears this? The generation is being told, I didn't make this with your fathers. They're not the ones who saw this. Your fathers are not the ones that saw these miracles. It is you. Look at the next paragraph, Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 2 through 7. You must now realize that I'm not speaking with your children, who do not know, who do not see the lesson the Lord your God taught through his greatness and his mighty hand and his outstretched arm. Look at the last verse, verse 7. Your eyes have seen the very great act of the Lord which he did. Who's hearing this for the very first time? Mission, section 11, transmission to future generations. But this is not with you alone that I'm making this covenant oath. I'm making with both those who are standing here today, with us before the Lord your God, and those who are not yet here with us. Going back. Writing the legacy, Moses finished writing the words of this Torah in the scroll to the very end. Prohibition of change. You can't change it. Do not add to the word that I'm commanding you. Do not subtract from it. You must keep all the commands of the Lord your God, which I am instructing you. Can't change it. You know, look at us here, Jewish people, Gentiles. I mean, we've all of us here probably been to a synagogue in our lives. Many of us spent all of our lives going to a synagogue. And those are